How do you end a song like that, but with applause? Ladies and gentlemen, that was from the 1970 original Broadway cast album. In the background, you hear someone not only singing along with the song, remembering the way that she was doing that song, but also thinking, oh, my God, 1970.
I know. I was just thinking the same. 1970, that 41 years ago? I mean, that's just shocking. It's shocking.
But wonderful in a way, because this person that we are talking to on the phone right now is still going strong. I mean, if we could have done Hello Dolly just as well and said, hey, Bonnie Franklin is still going strong. First of all, thank you so much, Bonnie, for being in the neighborhood with us this morning.
It is my pleasure.
Oh, so, yes, we rolled back 41 years to hear the song that basically netted you a Tony nomination way back when. Any memories? I mean, remember that
song. Oh, my God. Yeah. I have so many memories of that time. I mean, I am right now a block away from the theater, I mean, from the palace, as I sit here talking to you. So I walk past that theater that doesn't look at all like it did 40 years ago, but nevertheless, that my memories are major full from that period in my life. My parents came opening night. It was thrilling, and it was not only my first Broadway opening that I had been to. It was, you know, it was the one I was in, and it was a huge smash hit, and I had. You know, I certainly, being this young person, had no idea what I was getting into, what I was in, and what was going to happen. None.
Well, let's take it even back before that, because a couple of different bios on the web have different times for when you started even doing some acting. The earliest one I find is when you were 9 years old.
Yes. Well, that's when I started tap dancing with Donald O'Connor. And so that's correct. How do you like that? A correct bio somewhere. yeah, I was, and that's something I still really do well is tap dance. And in this show I'm doing here in New York, I have this very short but lovely soft shoe number. Donald O'Connor, the great, wonderful, gracious man that he was.
I've heard that from everybody. Has it been your memories? I mean, you were 9 years old, but was he very sweet and fatherly?
He was just great. You know, he started out in vaudeville when he was 3 years old, so he knows he knew what it was like to be a kid, you know, in the business. So he was just very, very gracious. Besides being brilliantly talented, but very gracious to young people, particularly. I mean, I was a young person, so I don't know what he was like to older people. But he was just a really lovely man, and I think the first show that I did with him was the Colgate Comedy Hour, but then he had a series called Here's Donald or something like that, and a bunch of us, including Sharon Baird, who was one of the Mouseketeers, Sharon on the Mouseketeers, was dancing in that show as well.
Well, here's what surprises me, though. I figured your parents would have been in show business, but they weren't. They were just in California.
No.
How did, at 9 years old?
I'm a first-generation American. My father was born, may he rest in peace, my father was born in Russia, and my mother was born in Romania. My mother's still going strong. My mother is 100 years old. We just celebrated her 100th birthday.
Oh, my God. Wow.
And then they each moved to Canada. And then he moved to Los Angeles and then courted her and brought her out to California. So, yeah, he was in business and investment banking, and my mother was a stay-at-home mom. I have four siblings.
So how did the whole tap-dancing Donald O'Connor thing come about?
Well, okay, you really want to know this.
Of course.
My mother always wanted to dance. She was much too poor to have any lessons or anything. They didn't have any money at all. And it was very important to her that all of her children get lessons. So we all did. We all had singing lessons and dancing lessons and piano lessons and clarinet lessons and whatever. And I took it seriously. I mean, it was something that I really wanted to do. I was taking ballet since when I was, I don't know, three or four, and elocution and Shakespeare and stuff since I was four.
Wow.
But my ballet teacher moved to a studio at which the teacher of Donald O'Connor, the great Louis de Prun, taught. Everybody who was taking, oh, my cell phone is ringing. Everybody who was, we'll just ignore that.
Okay.
Everybody who was taking, who was tap dancing got to be in a television show, and I wasn't tap dancing. So I said, I want to do that. So I started tap dancing, and that's how it all happened.
Okay, but
it, that's how it all began.
Yeah, but it, for you, I mean, it continued and continued. I mean, okay, you're a 9-year-old.
Well,
occurring,
it's,
yeah.
You know, I took to it, and I was a very serious child, and so I continued with the lessons, and I continued when I was in high school. It was important to me to, you know, to be in all the shows, and when I was in college, and I went came back east here to school. What I did when I was at Smith led to my professional career in a way, and that the people that I worked with, they were doing something and blah, blah, blah. So I started.
Do you remember what shows you were in college and high school? Do you remember what musicals or what were they? Come on.
When I was a freshman in high school, I was at Beverly Hills High School, and I did Sabrina, and I was the first freshman ever to do it. Now, understand, again, I told you how serious a child I was. So I memorized the whole play before I ever went in to read for it. So, of course, I was like, you know, I got it because I already knew it before I did. And then there was a musical that we did that they did once every 10 years or so called Hollywood Legend when I was a junior, I think, that I did when I was in high school. And then other shows as well. But those were the two major ones. And then the one that I did when I was at Smith was at Amherst, and it was Good News. And so that big musical led to my doing other stuff. But I came back to California, and I finished up college out there and did musical stuff there, which, like Carousel, playing the wrong role in it. But I played in the – I did that show in the Orient for the Armed Services, and did that when I was in – college, which led to 4 marriages out of that group and 4 divorces. Mm. And and then I just continued. And professionally, I did stuff in Los Angeles, and I did television all the way through high school. So I kept doing, you know, television, like.
And again, this is still well before Applause and all
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, this is before I came to New York.
But was it television
What brought me to New York is I did Your Own Thing in I opened the company in San Francisco, and then I replaced the original Leland Palmer, who was so brilliant in that, in Los Angeles. Then they asked me to do the Philadelphia company, and I was married at the time, and I said, no, I can't do that. And then the girl got sick who was opening the show in Philadelphia. So I went and did the show in Philadelphia, and while I was there, I did the show in New York. And that's what brought me to New York. And then I came back to L.A. and got a divorce and came back to New York. And then when I started my New York career.
Now, here's something that is confusing. I don't know if it's confusing
me
a little bit.
What?
No, surprising me a little bit because, you know, your first marriage, and you've gone on record saying that, well, you know, I couldn't be a housewife. I couldn't just be, like, the supportive person. But I believe your first husband, he runs a theater. Wouldn't he have understood that?
But he wasn't running a theater then. He wasn't running a theater. And it was a silly marriage. It was a really good divorce, but it was a really silly marriage. It lasted for a very short period of time, and it was, I just didn't know how to have an affair, quite honestly. I didn't know how to do that. I figured if I was going to sleep with somebody, I had to marry him.
Wow. Well,
I didn't
know
how to do anything else. That's the way I was brought up.
Right, yeah.
So that's what I did, and so we had this kind of silly marriage. And then we got a good divorce, and I was by the time the divorce was final, I was on Broadway. I was doing Applause already.
So let's hear some Applause stories about Lauren Betty Bacall. Come on, you got to have some Betty Bacall.
Yeah. She was quite wonderful to me. You know, I had this one number in the first act and one number in the second act, and I was sure that I was going to be fired. It was just silly, and because it didn't really mean anything to the show. And she was just gracious. There was, at the time, there was Look magazine, and Look magazine came out with this really kind of awful misquoted article, and I went crying to Miss Bacall, and she just said, look, you know, she'd been in the business for so many years, had been misquoted so often, and she said, no. And that number always stayed in the show. But, you know, I'll tell you, if it would have been Merman, that number wouldn't have been in the show. It just, you know, so she loved our company. She loved that first company, and she worked her tail off doing applause. She really did.
Well, that's great. I mean, I've met her once or twice, and you know, of course, the salty language you can, which I don't mind, but wow.
Yeah, well, you know, she's been through a lot in her life. You know,
fair.
She has, and she's, you know, she's tough. She's tough. But
and are you in touch
pretty,
at
she's
all?
She's pretty terrific.
Have you been in touch in, over the years? She's still around, obviously.
No, you know, every once in a while, when she would, I did a thing that she was being honored at something, and I remember I did a version of applause for that event and saw her there, but I haven't really been in touch.
Okay.
I remain friends with other people that I know from those years, Penny Fuller and Leroy Reams and
sure.
and Mary Beth, who was Mary Beth Cohn, actually was Keller in those days. So I've remained friends with them, and you know, every once in a while there will be, you know, Sammy Williams, who I gave his Tony to for Chorus Line, which was pretty exciting. Those friends have remained, and I've remained friends from a lot of other things, but not really with Betty.
Sure. So you stayed with Applause for just a few months, because, you know, that's...
No, I stayed with Applause for a long time.
Define...
I was in Applause for 2 years.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. I never signed a contract. I figured I would be there and gone. So I'm doing something else. But that didn't happen. I left the show a couple of times. I went and did an off-Broadway flop, and I went and did Thousand Clowns in at Paper Mill and stuff while I was in Applause. But I kept coming back to Applause. I was I did Applause for a couple of years. I worked with Ann Baxter. I worked with Arlene Dahl. I didn't go out on the road with it, but I stayed here in New York.
And all that time you were, yeah, obviously comfortable doing the show and also looking around for other things, but instead of jumping into another show, was that when television came calling instead? Do you think, was that how it worked?
No, I had done other stuff in between. I went and did a lot of regional theater and stuff before I went out to California. When did I go out to California? I went back out to California to do... The Law, which was a wonderful, wonderful television movie that won all kinds of awards way back when, starring Judd Hirsch and a lot of other people. It was just a great television movie. And then after I was doing Stock, I was doing Sugar and Kiss Me, Kate, and one other show that I'm... Oh, yes. Very important. No, Nanette.
Sure.
That's when I met Nanette, February. I had an affair with a guy that was on crew, and he was a teacher in Arizona. Do you need to know all of this information, Dave? I got to you. So I went out to Arizona to see him, to Phoenix, and while I was there, I went out to meet Norman Lear and the MTM people, because those were the television shows I loved, those done by those producers. And Norman Lear and I just fell in love. I mean, I love that man, and I love that man to this day. And we met, and the day we met, he introduced me to Alan Mannings, who had created the show that eventually was called One Day at a Time, and it happened that day.
Wow.
I got hired that day. I came back out to California to meet, do the first pilot, and then went back to work in the East, and I was in Cincinnati doing Oak Howard, and got the call to come out to do the second pilot, which was the one that started this series.
Huh. So. And I remember Norman Lear saying, I think it was Lear, who said about you, one of the reasons that you clicked so well and that he figured you would be right for TV and for that kind of show was that you had a wet face.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember? Well, define that for radio.
Yeah, well, a wet face and Norman was famous for casting wet faces. Gene Stapleton is an example of a wet face, as is Sally Struthers. It's a face that shows all of the emotion, as opposed to, let's see, Aaron Spelling's ladies, you know, who were much more beautiful, much more contained. Even Mary Tyler Moore, who was, first of all, that was done on film rather than on tape, but it, which makes a difference. But it's more contained. This other stuff, it's all out there. It's out there. You can see it in the eyes. You can see it in the face. And that is what he means by a wet face.
And a face
that shows all the emotion.
And it certainly did. And it was right for One Day at a Time, which, again, I was just reading some bios yesterday when I learned that we would actually be doing this interview. And I didn't realize initially there was only one daughter in the script.
Mackenzie was the only one. She was the only one, the first pilot. The first pilot was incredibly different from what the series happened to be. But Norman Lear, at that time, now, since then, he's had a whole third family, he's had a whole third family since then. He's had another twins and a boy, so since then. But at that time, his two youngest daughters were the prototypes, actually, for the two girls. And he had a daughter, he still has a daughter, whose name is Maggie, and she is really the prototype for the Valerie Bertinelli character. And because he had two daughters, that's how I ended up with two daughters.
And, of course, the show clicked pretty quickly. I mean, Lear was top of the heap.
Clicked very quickly with the public. I think that our first year, I actually believe that it was a pretty crappy year, except for our pilot and for our last two episodes. They were pretty bad scripts. But we learned a lot during that time. And what we did learn is that there was an audience out there that were relating to a single parent. There were a lot of single parents out there, and they'd never been reflected on the tube. So that's what we presented, and that's what was immediately, just from the letters we were receiving, immediately recognizable, and therefore the responsibility to do better shows ended up resting on my shoulders. I went crying to Carol O'Connor, may he rest in peace, one day and said, our scripts are so bad and what can I do? And he said, you've got to take responsibility. But I'm not a man. I'm not a writer. I'm not able to do this. And he said, well, you have to. That's all there is to it. And because I felt that responsibility, I learned how, by being told, I learned how to talk to writers, and rather than just saying, God, this is terrible, and they said, does it help if I say you're the darling Alan Manning? Said, does it help if I tell you that your acting is terrible? You have to tell me what it is you don't like, what it is you think can be better, and be constructive about it. And it was a huge learning experience. And starting out the last two episodes of our first year and continuing on, the scripts were much, much better.
And were you then part of the writing process, or you would just check in every once in a while?
We were. Norman Lear did a great thing, and it is not done anymore. Norman Lear had something called Table, which is done, but in which everybody, the actors, the writers, the producers, and now you've got all of the network and everybody involved, sit around and read the script. And then after you read the script, what happens today, unfortunately, or anyway, what happens today is that the writers and the producers all go off. What needs to be changed? What needs to be rewritten? The actors are sent home. Norman was a true believer that we all had a part in this process. And so we all sat there on the Monday after we had gotten our scripts, when we finished our production on Friday night. And so we had the weekend to look at them, think about them, whatever, and really were part of the process of saying, this doesn't work for me. You may think this is funny. I don't even think it's funny. Maybe if we go under this way, maybe if we, blah, 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 blah. And he really gave us leeway to and listen to us if indeed they were thoughtful comments and helpful.
And the writers wouldn't feel resentful so long as you phrased it in the correct way.
Yeah, like exactly. If you know, depending of course on the writers, but generally the writers, you know, listened. And as the years went on, we really knew our characters quite well and were able to really present what we thought this character would do and would not do. And it came true in a lot of instances during the, I mean, we were on the air for 9 years, right. So for the 9 years of that show, yeah.
Did you, do you remember any storylines that you particularly generated that you were like, well, this character really, it would make sense if she, or let's explore this issue?
Yeah, actually, we had a script, and it's very interesting. One of our years, I don't know, let's say 4 or 5, I really don't know what year it was, but we had a year in which my character went to a singles bar in the first act and then was raped in the second. And it just was handled so poorly, was written so poorly. And I thought, we can't handle a subject like this if it's not being handled well. If you want to do a story about a singles bar, that's fine. If you want to do a story, but you have to really... And so they actually ended up cutting the second act, doing a story about a singles bar, and the story of Ray went into that wonderful, magnificent episode that they did in All in the Family.
Oh, with David Duke.
That turned out to be, you know, that wonderful thing when Edith was when David Duke, you know, did the rape episode, which was handled magnificently, written wonderfully, and so forth. So that was one of the times where it was just not written well and was scotched. Another episode was one that got a lot of press because I was the only one in it. It was my 36th birthday, and I really spent the whole last half of it in a monologue, and that really reverberated with a lot of women out there. It should have been a 40th birthday, you know, looking back on it, but we did it when that character turned 36.
Well, back then that was middle age. Yeah.
There was a 3-part episode that we did that had to do with my having an affair. And in those days, that was just not done on television, and that a mother of two, and she was having this affair, and I remember Norman saying, you know, we couldn't do that at the very beginning. The audience had to really trust who our people were and believe that this was a difficult decision and right for her, and blah 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 blah. So it wasn't early on in the series, but it was later, and it was, you know, a wonderful 3-story arc. So, you know, we had a lot of things on one day. We handled teenage pregnancy, and we handled epilepsy, and we handled all kinds of heart disease and hearing issues and so forth. So. But we had to make it funny because what we were doing was not a, you know, documentary. We were doing a comedy show, and that was always utmost of importance. In order to get our messages across, we were doing comedy.
And speaking of handling things, though, and I'm sure you've answered this dozens of times, but what was it like? Okay, you had the hit show. You had, you know, this character that became identified with you, and all this you're keeping under control and having a career and doing all this. And at the same time, while everybody's pretty much on top of the world having a hit sitcom, things are imploding from within because of, you know, Mackenzie's addiction and all that. I mean, how did you guys get around that? How do you do a show when not knowing week to week what your co-star is going to be like, or even going to be there?
Well, she was fired. You know, she was fired twice, Mackenzie, from the show. It was major difficult. You know, God bless her. She's an extraordinary survivor, and who knew, surviving a lot of things besides drug addiction. It was very difficult. You know, they had to shoot around her. They had to, we didn't know who was going to be standing next to us, and it is why she was fired. You can't continue to do a show when you're dealing not with a person, but you're dealing with an addiction. You just can't. And she did clean up, and she came back, and then she went back on again, and again was fired. It was very difficult.
Was
it was difficult. Yeah.
Was it frustrating for you because specifically you're kind of, you're the mother on the show, and I assume a certain kind of surrogate mother to these two younger people? And could you,
yeah,
I mean, did you try to,
you know,
was there any way to help?
I was an innocent as far as drug use was concerned, so it all was like, I had no idea of the extent of it. I had no idea what the hell was going on until it was, you know, just so obvious. And it was major important that she be fired because she was just getting a lot of money that she was just sticking into her body and killing herself. And that had to, that just really had to stop. It was terrible for, it was terrible for all of us. We were all affected and continue to be, and continue to love her and support her through the incredible struggles that she has had through her life. I mean, as I say, she is, well, one of the strongest people I know. That anybody can survive what she's gone through is stunning.
Cool. We are talking with Bonnie Franklin, who is, of course, from Applause and One Day at a Time and the upcoming musical. I'm sorry if that was sort of a callous segue, but I needed to let that moment
You're apologizing to your audience, right?
Yeah. Just reminding everybody, and that Bonnie is alive and well and singing and tapping, and she will be in a show called My History of Marriage. Would this be considered a workshop or a developmental?
It is considered a workshop. It's part of the Workshop Festival, the new musical, New York Musical Festival.
Mm-hmm.
It's considered a workshop. It's in process, yet it is staged and it is choreographed and it is lit and it is memorized and they really do a full production here. It's just stunning that it gets put on as quickly as it is, and I was late coming to it, in that I was finishing a production of Steel Magnolias out in California. So I came into this about 10 days into the process. But, and it's a wonderful cast, and it's a beautiful score, and the book is quite moving.
And the general public is invited. I mean, people
That's
can...
That's indeed true.
Cool. It's not just for backers and producers. And
That's
things.
Right.
Right.
That's right. It's
cool.
At the Signature Theater, and there are 6 performances, and there's a website. Don't ask me what it is, but you probably know.
Well, nymf.org gives you all the stuff for the shows. Nymf.org. Do you have a little more time with us? Because I do have more questions for Bonnie Franklin.
Okay.
Wonderful, wonderful. Let's take it back then to just where we were with 9 seasons of One Day at a Time, runs
right.
a marvelous run, and then boom, that ending of a show, ending of almost a generational family there. What was that like?
Well, we chose to go,
right.
So
yeah.
we were lucky. Our last year was a disruptive year, and Mackenzie was using again. Mm-hmm. The writers were tired. The show just wasn't fun to go to work. And I really believe very strongly, I mean in the deepest part of my heart, that, you know, you're spending so much time there that if it's not going to be a good experience, bye-bye, just get rid of it. I don't understand how, you know, and I've heard all the stories, and I don't understand how you can go to work and be miserable. I don't get it.
Welcome to 90% of the human race, Bonnie. I mean,
I know, I just don't understand.
Yeah.
No, but in this particular business, this is, you know, our business is, there's the possibility of you're doing supposedly creative work every day. Mm. You're supposedly doing something that you love and should be a good experience, not something that is that makes you unhappy. I mean, that makes you unhappy. Mm. It's just the nature of what it is that we do, and it's, you just don't want to continue doing it. The stories that I've heard about other shows where they're fighting and they're using and they're it's just I don't understand. I don't physically understand how you do it, literally. So it's a lot of hard work, and it should be good work. Anyway, so we chose. I said after the second episode of that year, I want this to be the last year. And indeed, that's what it was.
And any memories of that very last taping?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were, you know, everybody was crying. The whole episode was about saying goodbye. Right. So, you know, everybody was saying goodbye. Not that we haven't, a lot of us, or most of us, have remained friends and connected and see each other and love each other and support each other. But it was saying goodbye of a family, of being together for 9 years, you know, 5 days a week. So it was a tough episode. I think I've seen the episode. I think I saw it once, and it's, you know, everybody's saying goodbye.
Sure.
It's hard.
But well, actually, one of the coolest things, and you probably didn't even realize it back then, is here we are 41 years on, and most of those folks are still around. Isn't that great? I mean, Pat Harrington,
yes.
Richard...
40 years for that show.
Oh, well, it's all, well, 75...
Hey, don't make it worse
I'm sorry.
Than it is.
35 years.
It was 40 years for Applause,
sorry.
Not for that show.
35, Bonnie. I mean,
probably. It was 76, I guess, that we started. So,
okay.
You're right. Oh, my God. Yes, I had dinner with Nanette Fabre not too long ago.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. So, and I was just talking to a family member who went to Rosh Hashanah services, and Michael Lembeck's wife is a cantor, and she was the cantor at that service. So, yes, we've all stayed, and I've worked a lot with Pat Harrington, and my best friend is Shelley Fabre. So, we've all stayed pretty close.
And certainly Boyd Gaines has had this wonderful career on Broadway.
Boyd has had the most wonderful career here in New York. It's just lovely. It's just lovely. Great pride.
So coming,
I've had nothing to do with it, but I still am very proud of him.
Well, he's a wonderful actor, actually.
He is a great actor. He's a wonderful actor and a wonderful musical performer as well.
So coming out of One Day at a Time then, okay, you make this decision and it's time to end the show. You do. But now you face the rest of your life. So, and, well, granted.
Oh, my God, you're very dramatic.
Well, that kind of is.
Oh, my God. Oh, it makes me seem like, oh, my God. Yes, I guess I did. But understand that, I had a life outside of my work. Understand that I was married. I had two stepkids. I had dogs. I had my whole family out there. I was asked at that time what it is that I wanted to do, what I felt passionate about. Now, also understand that throughout that whole time, I was, oh, my God, that was so dramatic, doing One Day at a Time, I continued to sing. So I did nightclub acts and cabaret acts every off-season so that I would not be afraid to continue to do that. I was asked what I felt passionate about. I said tap dancing, and so I made a couple of videos of teaching people how to tap. I hate to exercise. I'd love to tap, which is still selling today. It's a good cassette, actually. It's a good DVD. It started as a cassette, not a DVD. So I did that. I had done television movies and stuff throughout, doing One Day at a Time. Did a couple of... and then I started doing... I came back to the theater. So
yeah.
I did a great deal of theater over the next 20 years or so that I guess it's been. Oh, my God, I feel so old talking to you.
I'm sorry. It's not like
theater.
I'm 20.
So I came back. I came here. I did Annie Get Your Gun and Frankie and Johnny and the Claire de Lune. I did a lot of theater throughout the country, in all over the country.
Well, I think you did Frankie and Johnny off-Broadway for a bit.
I did.
Yeah.
I did for 4 months, and I did Grace and Glory here with Michelle Parsons, and then did a great deal of regional theater, and I've been lucky enough, and I did Virginia Woolf at Pittsburgh Public, and I did Delicate Balance at the Rubicon and Dancing at Lunasa, and I just finished, a lot, Shirley Valentine. So I was able, because what happens wonderfully as you get older, the wonderful thing is that the theater roles get rich and wonderful and deep and thick, and I was able to take advantage of that, so that was good.
Any thoughts on the favorite roles that you've done in regional and local theater?
Well, I've actually told you what they were as we spoke. I loved doing Shirley Valentine. Virginia Woolf was a great experience. And it turns out, interestingly enough, that the one that I just finished, Dual Magnolias, I played Weezer and found a depth to that character that is just, I guess, is not on the page, and it was, that was kind of exciting. So, yeah. Those.
And other projects.
And Frankie and Johnny, which loved doing.
That's a lovely play.
Is a wonderful play. Terrence McNally said to me, I like the man who wrote that play, which was very nice because he really did write a really lovely, very hopeful piece.
Now, you get to pick and choose, obviously, what you want to do. So aside from My History of Marriage, what else is on the burner percolating?
Well, I have a theater company in Los Angeles called CCAP, which is called stands for Classic and Contemporary American Plays.
And
we do an outreach program. We do fabulous plays. I mean, fabulous plays, everything from, you know, Arthur Miller to Tennessee Williams to Neil Simon to Wendy Wasserstein to David Mamet to whatever, and to new plays as well. And we do an outreach for juniors and seniors in high school in the greater Los Angeles area. We started out in 2001, actually September 10th, 2001, because we were doing Summer and Smoke, and 9/11 was the next day, and I remember it very clearly. On 9/12. Everybody wanted to come back. You know, it was that kind of communal, everybody should be there. The theater was packed. It was interesting. So we've been doing that for a long time, for 10 years. And I go back right from here, and we do our first play, which is going to be Tally's Folly. And then we will do two more plays this year, in January and March, I think.
And sometimes you appear in shows at...
Yes, sometimes I appear in them. Sometimes I direct. I'm actually looking forward to doing nothing. the first 6 months of this year, I did a lot of traveling. My husband died almost 2 years ago now, and this year I did... my first 6 months of this year, I was in Tanzania. I was in Italy, I was in London, I was in, I took my kids on a Disney cruise, kids and grandchildren, it was just New York and San Francisco and blah, blah, blah. And it was like, oh my God, I'm home, I'm so happy to be home and I'm with my dogs and blah, blah, blah. And then when I did this play at the Rubicon, I have another home at the beach, and so I was living at home there, so it was great. And then this call came to do this, and I really, 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 really was hesitant. But I've known Lee Kalsheim, who wrote the book and the lyrics for this. I've known him
You dated him at some point, I think, weren't you?
I did. Yeah. Long time ago. And love him still. And you know, we've remained friends for all of these years.
Oh, cool.
And he asked me to come, And I think the music is wonderful, and I think the play is really good as well. So, you know, with a great big deep sigh, I said, yes, okay, I'll come. One of the lyrics in one of the songs is, what happens if I just say yes? And so I did. And so I'm here. And, boy, you've done your homework. I can't believe you know that Lee and I were together for a while. So,
Google tells you everything.
Yes, so I'm doing this, but when I'm finished with this, I am looking forward to actually not working for a while, we'll do that play, and then it's Thanksgiving, and then it's Christmas, and then it's New Year's, and, you know, it's already 2012, so I'm ready to do family things for a little bit.
Well, I would have said, did you plunge into work, you know, following the death of your husband, Marvin Minoff, but you were a workaholic to begin with. So did that help, or did you go extra into just like, you know, I need to be working now?
I'm not sure that I was a workaholic, okay? I would quibble with that statement. But I, you know, it's really interesting. I think about... my husband died within a two-month period. He was diagnosed, and then it was like, boom, 2 months later, he was gone. And I do think, you know, that wonderful Joan Didion book of Year of Magical Thinking, I think that I thought I was handling everything quite well. And I look back on that time now, and I think that there were big, like, lapses when I was doing things kind of by rote. I have been working, but I think it's just happened, you know. I think I did Love, Loss, and What I Wore in L.A., and then, you know, and then I just think it happened, you know, and I've been dealing a great deal with, I have two gorgeous, gorgeous grandchildren. I have two fabulous dogs. I have a 100-year-old mother. And all of these home things really keep me quite occupied, actually. I'm working because I like to and because it's something that I do, you know, it's kind of part of who I am. But at this point in my life, I'm not unhappy not working.
Oh, cool. Cool. So I'm just worried there'll be this moment when, you know, you haven't slowed down and settled down and stopped because maybe you'd be afraid of all this 30 years of marital emotions and grief coming out. So it isn't quite like that.
You know, I've let that all, it's come out. Things happen in, interestingly enough, in waves, and that's just, it just is it's a time thing. And I think that there are things about the high holidays that bring up all kinds of emotional things just because of what they are. I'm okay. Thank you.
That's great. That's great. And it's kind of cool to hear that you mentioned the high holidays and all that stuff. You've also been, and I credit you with this, very pro-Jewish and pro-Israel throughout your, you know, you've done little things. I remember, I think you did the Jewish Sesame Street at one point.
That was great fun.
Good. What was
that was great fun, yeah.
Was it Rechav Sumsum?
It's so nice to have that on, you know, on tape and DVD and around, because there's a whole generation of little kids who, you know me from that, which is great.
So it is 11 o'clock here in Greeley, Colorado, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, out in New York, where we are speaking with the wonderful Bonnie Franklin, who will be in My History of Marriage as part of the New York Musical Theater Festival. Steve Blanchard is her co-star in that, and David Shire and Lee Kalchime are the writers on this very cool.
And the real lead of it is actually Lois Robbins.
I'm sorry, I did not realize that. Lois Robbins is the main lead actress. So what character,
she's the main actress.
Forgive me, then what character do you play in this? You may have mentioned this before, but...
No, I didn't. It's her story. It's that character's story, a woman in her 40s who is writing this book. And I'm her agent. I'm her her literary agent. Who, at the end of this marriage, at the end of this story, this history of marriage, which is done in song and so forth, that takes marriage from the Stone Age all the way to the present time. I'm a gay woman who gets married to her partner of 18 years at the end of the play.
Oh, very sweet. That sounds very cute.
Yeah, it is, actually.
And you get to do a soft shoe somewhere in there.
I do, indeed. So yes.
If you want to see the wonderful Bonnie Franklin still sing and dance and tap and act and see her live and in person in a nice theater over in the Signature Space.
It is. It's a lovely space.
Well, wait. Actually, it's the Peter Norton...
Space. Right. Peter Norton Space at the Signature Theater.
Right. Didn't they just... Is it in the new, brand-new, renovated building? Because they just...
Actually, I think it is. I think they have three new theaters. But, you know, we have not even been over there yet. We don't get there until the day that we do this.
Oh, cool. Well,
it is a workshop. I have to go. I have to leave you. I'm going to the ballet.
Well, enjoy the ballet. Thank you, Bonnie Franklin. Much success to you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Dave.